Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Dan Lynch. Episode 121 for May 27th, 2010. Freenode. It's time for Floss Weekly, the weekly show about free, libre, open source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, coming to you live, this time from the 43rd floor of the ninth tallest building in downtown L.A., having a great time here in a slightly different surroundings. I think that's a map of the internet up there behind me for those that are watching the video. I have yet another co-host. John O'Bacon's shoes were way too large to fill. So this time I decided to get a token UK Brit voice. Let's bring him on. Hey, Dan Lynch, come on. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks very much for having me on. Yeah, I thought you needed another sarcastic Englishman, so I thought I'd better step in and fill John's boots, as you say.
And he has pretty big shoes to fill there. And Dan, you and I actually go back a ways because I was on your show. A lot of people actually listening to this will know you as the leader of the Linux Outlaws show. Why don't you tell a little bit about that?
Yeah, I do a weekly podcast called Linux Outlaws, which I co-host with Fab, who's in Germany, and I'm in the UK, based in Liverpool, as you might, some of the more local people recognize from my accent. And yeah, we do a weekly show about Linux and open source news, and we have guests on, such as yourself, and we have lots of interviews and features, reviews, things like that. Every Monday night, linuxoutlaws.com.
And I've got to say, I listen to your show on a regular basis. And that's, there's a lot of shows I don't listen to because I just don't have time, but I really appreciate your show. And one of the things I really like, you know, because people keep asking me, you need to do more Linux stuff on Floss Weekly, and you need to do more news stuff on Floss Weekly. And that's not really my area. I really don't know a lot about desktop Linux. It's not one of the things I use. And I keep pointing people all the time now at your show to say, look, if you want news, if you want Linux, these guys cover it top to bottom. There's no way I could even approach being a competitive with that. So I just wanted to say thank you for producing a high quality show on a regular basis for that.
No problem. It's definitely a different way of doing things. When you tie yourself to current events, you do have to get the show out on time, because if we record the show on a Monday and put it out a week later, then all the news is pretty much history and nobody wants to know. So yeah, it has its benefits and its downsides as well, but it's pretty good.
Very nice. So, yeah, it's really great, like I said, that you have that sort of news philosophy so I can do all the timeless shows. Now, even having said that, you know, there are times when we don't come out weekly, and it's sometimes it's beyond my fault. Last week we got preempted, in fact, because of that little Google I.O. event, and they always happened to be right during the very time that we taped this show. So for everybody that was looking forward to last week's show, don't worry. We've rescheduled everybody for a few weeks from now, so the show's still going to happen, just going to be a few weeks down in the slot. So speaking of shows, let's see. I'm going to make sure I've covered everything here on my notes. There we go. So we've got on today's show a very interesting guy. He originally contacted me about, I think, 2 or 3 months ago to get on the show. It's Jonathan Simpson. And Jonathan Simpson's volunteer role is that he spends time working with Freenode. Now, if you've been to an open source website, you might have seen a description of join us on the IRC chat on Freenode at this pound sign, and some, like, usually the name of the channel is related to the name of the project. And we're going to get Jonathan on to talk about what is Freenode, what is IRC, how long has it been around, how do you use it, and so on. So does that sound like a good show there, Dan?
Yeah, it sounds great. I mean, we use IRC for Linux Outlaws, and I know Jonathan a little bit. He's helped us out. He actually bailed us out when we first set up our IRC channel because I didn't know what the hell I was doing. And he saved us from spammers and other kinds of people. So, he's definitely an interesting guy to talk to.
So let's go ahead and get Jonathan on the line. Hello, Jonathan.
Hello.
Hi. So where are we speaking to you from?
I'm currently... in Conshohocken, Pennsylvania, in my company I work for in their in a spare conference room. Hijacked for today.
Very cool. Well, glad to have you on the show. We've been chatting for a while to get you on the show, and I'm here with Dan Lynch. I think you've met him, right?
Not in person, but we've interacted a little bit before dealing with originally with his IRC channel on Freenode, and since then periodically for other stuff.
Well, cool. Hey, so as we're getting started here, I went into a bit of explanation at the beginning of the show, but let's go take this all the way back, because there may be a bunch of our audience that doesn't even know what IRC is. Can you explain what IRC is, maybe where it came from?
Sure. IRC is a very old, in terms of internet stuff, protocol used for communication. At its most basic, it's just a way for people to talk to each other and communicate. It's very simple. It's based on plain text. You can actually get onto IRC with a telnet, for example, if you know the right commands. It's not very simple that way, but it can be done.
So basically, it's a chatting system, internet relay chat. That's where the name comes from.
That is where the name comes from.
And so people chat with each other, typically geographically distant, to communicate back and forth. And this is done with text.
Yes.
Cool. And this is I should have pulled up the Wikipedia page in IRC, but IRC's been around for like 20 years, right?
It's been around for quite a while. I think it began in like 1988, which, mm-hmm. For something on the internet is a pretty decent age.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still, pretty much going strong today. There's quite a few IRC networks out there, of which Freenode is one of the larger ones, and a lot of people are using it.
Yeah, well, I find that interesting, because when I mention IRC to the kids today, I mean, I'm going to make myself sound really old, but when I mention IRC to the kids today, they go, is that like instant messaging? Is that like a AIM chat room or something? And what would you tell them?
It's probably more like an AIM chat room than it would be like instant messaging. There is instant messaging, in a manner of speaking, in it, because you can send messages to individuals as well as to channels, which are groups of people. But
okay,
it's more a chat room.
And so in order for this to work, though, you have to have a server somewhere. I mean, I have to actually go somewhere. It's not like AIM, where it sort of just magically works. I don't even know how AIM works. I just connect that it works. But for IRC, you have to go to a specific site, right? And is that where Freenode comes in?
That is where Freenode comes in. Freenode is one of those networks which is made up of multiple servers. With AIM, it just sort of works because it's built into the software. It knows where to go.
Mm-hmm.
With IRC, you have to know where you want to go. So there's more choice. There's more freedom, but it's a little less simple. A lot of the mainstream IRC clients come with a lot of these networks pre-populated in them, so you can just pick one, but you still have to know, where am I going?
Right. Now, and there's Freenode's just one of the networks then, right?
Yes.
Or what are some of the other ones that are big and perhaps popular?
Well, there's quite a few big ones. There's FNET, Dalnet, and several others. I don't know all of them. There's literally hundreds of IRC networks, and they vary in size from something somebody put together with a couple of their friends to tens of thousands of users.
And that is one thing that's interesting about IRC, is that you can set it up just for like within a company or within a group. There's nothing special really about running an IRC server. It's just that nobody would know about it unless you told them about it.
Exactly.
Okay, so let's get back to Freenode's purpose then. So Freenode is a series of machines, actually. It's not just one machine. Do I need to connect to a particular one for a particular channel, or are all the channels just show up everywhere?
No, you can connect to any. In fact, what you typically do is you connect to chat.freenode.net in your IRC client, mm-hmm. and that will pick a server based on our DNS rotation.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll get one that has available resources to handle more users, and we rotate through them so everybody gets split up pretty evenly and things keep working the way they're supposed to. So you don't have to know where you're connecting to as far as what server. Every channel is accessible from every server, and you can talk to anyone on any server. So really, you treat it as, here's the network, And I'm going to connect to Freenode, the network, and talk to somebody on this channel. And you can connect to any server for that. Some people like to connect to particular ones. Maybe they want to connect to one that's close to them, or something of that nature. There's servers in the US, the UK, and several other places, but the majority of them are in the US or Europe.
Okay. And so how someone might find their way to something like this is, like, let's say I'm working with FreeBSD and I want to maybe have some tech support or want to chat with people about things I'm discovering about FreeBSD. I see on the FreeBSD homepage that you can connect up to IRC on Freenode. And then there's usually the name of a channel there. In this case, it's really simple. It's FreeBSD. So I would use my IRC client then to go to Freenode and then connect up to the FreeBSD channel. What might I see once I arrive there?
Usually you'll see a list of different users who are on the channel, and you'll see them talking about whatever they'll happen to be talking about at the time, and it'll go back and forth. And you'll see, you know, you see the list of names, and you'll see people coming and going. So in your case, you know, you want to ask a question, you could just go in and start with, well, I'm trying to do this and it's not working, and what do I do next?
So in some cases, these chat rooms are used like tech support. Or so if I had a question, I could probably go and ask it. Is that all they're used for? Is just providing some way for people to ask questions?
That is a big portion of what goes on, but that's not the extent of it, because you know, there's a lot more. There's even going back to, you know, say a project like FreeBSD or Ubuntu or whatever you may have. In many cases, they have separate channels from what they use for tech support, where they discuss things about the project, where they communicate between developers, where they communicate within their groups, where, you know, for example, where they plan events. We just got back actually from an event that we planned with several Linux users groups, and having them on IRC where we could easily collaborate made it a lot easier to get to everybody and organize it. So it's more than just tech support.
Yeah, that is one advantage of this, is that it's real time. People are actually chatting with you right now, no matter where they are geographically then.
Yes.
Now, does that, having to communicate with a bunch of other people in a text chat, does that ever lead to problems and issues, or is it always pretty clear?
Well, just like any text chat, you lose some content by not being face to face and not hearing, you know, intonations in the voice, stuff like that. So there's always a little, I'll say, signal loss there. But by and large, you know, you can get through that. And for some things, it's a lot more useful. It's a lot harder to give somebody some obscure shell command over the phone than it is on a text-based medium, be it, you know, IRC or a forum or an email, because they can take that and use it and be sure they're doing it right. So, you know, there are disadvantages, but there's advantages for that purpose as well.
I remember trying to do support for people early in the web when Perl started being used for CGI a lot. And I remember people coming into the Perl channel asking very complex CGI questions. And it was like, I always likened it to maybe like trying to teach somebody how to fly a plane through a text chat or instant messages or SMS messages. My throttle's on. Now what do I do? Something like that.
So I, you know, I could see the problem there. And,
so,
you know,
Jonathan, Jonathan, I was wondering, what kind of user levels do you see on Freenode? Can you give us an idea of, I don't know, how many active users there are in any typical day on Freenode?
I can tell you what we have right at this moment, and I'll tell you whether that's impressive. About the normal. So right now we have 61,789. And that's about where we've been averaging recently, is about the 60,000 mark.
So that's 60,000 across the entire network, connected to all the machines at once?
Yes, that's at this point in time. That's not necessarily, you know, how many are going to connect today, but that's how many are connected right now.
Now, my experience with Freenode channels is that there's a lot of people idling on a lot of the channels. Why would people do that?
Well, I'm one of those people, so I can.
So why do you do it?
I can definitely give you my explanation. Whether it bears out for everybody else, I don't know. But so the reason I do it is partly because I like to see what's going on when I'm not necessarily right there, and another reason is I'm in a lot of channels. I'm in probably about 60 channels at any given time, and often many more than that, and. Just rejoining all those if I close my client would be irritating. But beyond that, it's useful to me to see what goes on when I'm not actually there.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's really my reasoning. And a lot of people do the same thing. I know Dan doesn't.
So do you actually scroll back through the history? No, I don't. You know me too well. Do you actually scroll back? Because I know what a lot of people do. What you're saying is they have a lot of channels that they're in that they maybe not actively read in all the day. But what a lot of them tend to do is go back maybe later in the evening or something and scroll back through the channels. Now, that seems like a lot of work to me. And I've got to be honest, I'm far too lazy for that. So do you do that? Do you go back through chats and pick up old conversations and things?
I often will go back, but usually it's something that triggers it. For example, I have like highlights that'll highlight if somebody says my name or something like that, and I'll go back and see, well, what were they looking for? And there's other things like there's channels that are important enough to me that I will go back and read everything. But it depends on what it is. Like there's an Ubuntu channel that probably gets 1,000 lines every 5 minutes. There's no way I would read the scroll back on that, but I'm still there and I'll still find out what somebody said to me if they did.
Yeah. Well, that brings up an interesting point. What do you think your busiest channels are on Freenode? Say like the most popular ones. I imagine Ubuntu is quite busy. Do you know what the biggest ones are?
Ubuntu is the biggest one. It has. Give me a moment. And I'll give you the number for that too. Right now, it's got 1,654 people in there, and it's a very fast paced channel.
Okay. Yeah. That. Mm. So, what's your role within Freenode and in the IRC network? What do you do on a daily basis for Freenode related? I suppose.
Well. A number of things. The biggest, most important thing really is just keeping things moving, because the network exists for groups and communities and projects to communicate, and they need to be able to do that. I can give you a specific example, Dan, that you probably recall is your guys' channel wasn't registered correctly, and we had to work through that and figure that out. So, things like that, just dealing with issues. People forget their password and stuff like that is the real day-to-day dirt and grime. And then, sometimes there's more interesting stuff. Mm-hmm. You'll get into a conversation over, is Freenode the right place for me to have a channel for my project? Because we're not a general purpose chat. We don't, intend to provide resources for people to just come and chat about whatever. We have a pretty specific goal in mind. So,
So how many staff does it take? Because I know you call them staffers, the Freenode staffers, as they call them, but I believe they're mostly volunteers, aren't they? Or they may even be all volunteers. So how many of those people does it take, like yourself, to keep Freenode as we know it on the air, so to speak, or on the net?
They are all volunteers, and there's generally under 30. You put it in those terms, there's about 2,000 users for every at any one time for any one staffer, and all those staffers are not going to be around at the same time either. So it can be entertaining at times if there's a lot of things to deal with.
And how do you have fundraising?
That makes sense.
Sorry, I stepped on you. How do you have fundraising for that? I mean, is that where you get stuff? Is it donations? Is it charity drives? You got to obviously, like I said, pay for the equipment and stuff, right?
We actually don't have to pay for the equipment, and the way that works, but we do still have fundraisers. So I'll explain both aspects.
Okay.
We have fundraisers for because there are costs that we have. I mean, even, you know, simple things, domain names and you know, email processing and this and that needs to be taken care of. And, you know, over a grander scheme, the cost can add up. But the servers themselves are actually donated by various organizations, companies, universities, and so forth that offer to host a server on our behalf. And we make it part of the network and we manage it. And the network is made up pretty much entirely of these systems. And there's just a couple that we use for utility services and stuff that we need to pay for directly. So, you know, off the amounts that we get from fundraising, there's no way we could run the size of network we are with just that. So, you know, we're really fortunate that these companies and organizations and you know, educational institutions are willing to do this.
Very cool. So earlier you mentioned that there's like one of you staff for every like 2,000 users, but obviously you're not monitoring all the individual channels. Is there some sort of intermediate tier of people that manage the channels themselves?
The channels are generally self-managed they have their own staff or operators or whatever they, you know, at that level, they can call them whatever they want. Mm-hmm. Because we're really, our purpose is just to provide the framework on which they can build their own community and do with it what they will. So they operate, you know, a lot of different ways. A lot of the channels are very regimented in how they, you know, choose staff and so forth. And some of them are more just, well, here's someone in the community who's interested and knows what they're doing. We'll make them part of it, but it's a channel by channel decision. It's not really something that Freenode staff takes a part in, unless we happen to be also involved in that particular channel usually for our own purposes.
Now, if I just want to get together with some of my friends to chat about some open source project, presuming it's within the scope of what Freenode is supporting, I can just go in and make my own channel and tell my friends about it, right?
You can do that. There's some guidelines on what kind of channel. We distinguish between two kinds of channels.
Okay.
We have what we call official channels, and then we have unofficial channels.
Mm-hmm.
And the difference is, if you're familiar, you know, with IRC, how IRC channels are named, they're prepended with a hash mark.
Okay.
So on Freenode, a single hash mark indicates a official channel, while two hash marks indicates a unofficial channel. So you have a channel like #Ubuntu, which is the official channel of Ubuntu. And then you have a channel like #Windows. Well, Microsoft doesn't have a presence on Freenode. They have no relation to that channel. It's just there because someone thought it would be a good idea to help out people who need help with Windows.
Okay. So if I was part of a group that just needed to casually meet to have a conversation, I could just create a channel for my open source software and just tell my friends to come there. But how would I then go about making it like an official channel for official representation?
To make it an official channel, I mean, number one, if it's a relevant project or a group, like a Linux users group or pretty much anything that has real, you know, relevance like that and some sort of a verifiable presence can be an official channel.
Mm-hmm.
So you can register the channel with the channel services. There's an IRC mechanism. It's called ChanServe that you can register a channel with. But to complete the registration process, as far as being an official channel, we require that you register with Freenode, the entity, as well as the channel services. And we have what's called a group registration form that you can fill out online that says, this is who I am. This is what my project is. This is the channel or channels that we need. And that gets processed to basically sort of creates a relationship between here's someone from my project that's willing and able to administer our IRC stuff. And then we know who that is, because there's things you can do with that. You can have cloaks on your username that say I'm associated with this project, and stuff like that based on that registration.
Yeah, I mean, it's really a complex infrastructure, ecostructure, because I have like a registered name that is protected by password so that nobody else can be me can be Randall Schwartz on Freenode. So people are guaranteed that if it's me, it's or if it says it's me, it's probably me. Well, unless they stole my password, I guess. But I really like that that sort of infrastructure is all there. I also like that you are willing to pretty much host any open source project within your guidelines, so that I don't have to, as a small open source project, go, well, now we need a server running somewhere and we need to babysit these equipment. Freenode's doing that all for me.
Yeah, that's kind of the idea, is to, you know, to take a little bit of that away. Because, I mean, if you're, let's be honest, if you're starting an open source project, you probably have more important things on your mind than trying to host an IRC server or any kind of chat service that you're going to have to maintain and keep, you know, troublemakers off of. And, you know, I'm not saying that we watch every single channel and intervene when someone's causing minor problems, but we can at least make sure that the network is running as well as it can. And that's one less thing for people to worry about if they're trying to actually get work done. And that's really, I think, where we fit in.
So in essence, you're offering the chat infrastructure the same way that, say, GitHub or SourceForge would offer the shared repository.
Absolutely.
Yeah, cool. All right. That's really amazing. Now, how did this all start? How did Freenode come about?
Well, there was a channel on another network, and it sort of started with that. And it's grown substantially past that. It actually began on, I mentioned FNet earlier, and there was a small channel on FNet that Freenode, some of the original founding people were talking there, and eventually, after moving around a couple times, started a separate network, which eventually evolved into Freenode. So it started with, you know, a handful of people, and now, years later, we have 10,000 channels, 60,000 users. It's become a huge thing.
Now, there's a guy who went by the name of Lilo. I don't know how to pronounce it.
Yeah.
Sorry. Did he start Freenode?
More or less, yeah. Lilo started. Lilo was basically the founder, and for a long time was the head of staff. Although that was actually before I got involved with Freenode.
Mm-hmm. And he also, I think, started Freenode as a actually, the PDPC, which we also should get to in a few minutes here, the PDPC, mm-hmm. which was a nonprofit in the U.S. Now it's a nonprofit in Europe, right?
Yes.
The UK.
Well, I'd say it's actually seeking charity status in the U.K., which takes a while. You have to prove that you're. It's a bit more complicated than here, unfortunately. But Lilo passed away some years ago, and the new head of staff was. Resides in the UK, so it was simpler to rebuild the PDPC there, basically, than try to run it from overseas.
Okay. And what else does PDPC do? I understand there's something called FOSCON. You want to talk about that?
FOSCON is one of our outside projects. And if we go back to the concept that the purpose of Freenode is to provide an infrastructure for people to communicate with each other, basically. FOSCON, I sort of see it as an extension of that. This is, you know, we have this resource, we can talk to each other online. Now let's try to get some people together in the real world. And FOSCON is basically that. It's a free and open source conference. It's in Rochester, New York on June 19th. It's next month. And it's basically built by the same sort of people that put together, not really Freenode exactly, but like the channels on Freenode, the actual communities. There's people from Lugs all over the Northeast U.S. that are involved in this and helped plan it and put it together and make things happen and get speakers. So it's really pretty cool that everybody just comes together like that.
And what do people speak on at FOSCON? Is it a general open source conference?
It pretty much is. There's a FOSS business, a FOSS education, and a FOSS at home track. So pretty much everybody's got a little, you know, something to listen in on. And there's a couple workshops as well. And as is, you know, pretty much the standard thing with these kind of conferences, there's also going to be like bird of a feather sessions that we call them, where you meet with other, you know, like-minded people about pretty much whatever you want. And those are free form. There's no schedule for those defined by the conference. It's defined by the people who attend.
Kind of like a food camp or bar camp or something then.
Yeah, exactly. But within the, you know, the structure of everything else going on around you.
Right. Like at OSCON, they have unconferences that are similar, I suppose.
Yep. It's basically the same sort of thing.
Now, the next upcoming FOSCON is just right around the corner, right?
This is actually the first FOSCON.
Oh, okay. First. So,
yep. And we do plan on continuing it if everything goes well. But yeah, the first one is on June 19th, next month in Rochester.
Do you still have room for people to sign up, speakers? Yeah. Or is it all slotted for the speakers? Is it, I guess for the unconference, anybody that shows up could be a speaker.
The, talk slots are all full, but absolutely on the unconference, anybody can just say, I would like to, you know, do this or whatever. And there's space available for that kind of thing.
And there's, for details on that, it's at, FOSCON.org, maybe?
It is FOSCON.org, yes.
Oh, good. Good, I got it right in the first try. Wow. Well, so that sounds encouraging.
Yeah, so...
go ahead, Dan.
Sorry to cut in. Speaking of events, something else that Jonathan's involved with that I know a little bit about is something called the Geeknik. Now, I wondered if you could explain for everyone listening and watching what a Geeknik is, Jonathan?
A Geeknik is when a bunch of geeks get together in a park and try not to burn it down while making hamburgers, basically. But
right.
But or sometimes more than that. Okay. We actually just got back from a Geeknik a couple days ago, me and some people from the Philadelphia Linux Users Group and some of the New York Linux Users Groups, New York City Linux Users Group and Long Island Linux Users, a bunch of people from all around this area. And we went camping for 2 nights in a state park in New Jersey. And, you know, we've done that twice now here, but it's a lot of fun. And there's been all sorts of other Geeknicks all around the world and in the UK. There's one that I just found out about a couple days ago in Shanghai, which will be the first that I'm aware of in China. And Brazil, Portugal, I'm really surprised how many it looks like there's going to be this year. So, you know, it's the same thing.
I mean, the idea behind it is to, if I've got it right, to get geeks out from behind their computers and in their, you know, dark server rooms and into the fresh air and the parks and stuff. So how does that work? How does your turnout usually go on those kind of things?
We've been, I mean, here in the Northeast anyway, we've been averaging between 20 and 30 people. I don't know how good a job we do of getting people behind computers, because I have some very telling pictures from our last two camping trips. One of a 9-year-old girl with a laptop in the middle of the forest. And let's see, this year we built a battery pack for a portable DVD player so that some of the kids could watch a movie. but you know, we're still in the woods. So
how do you do with Wi-Fi? Sorry, I have to ask, but all geeks are going to ask that, aren't they? How do you get on with Wi-Fi? Because that's my first question. Is I can't go out of a Wi-Fi access point range for too long, otherwise I'll just keel over and die or something. You know, like in that, like all these geeks. So how do you deal with that? Do people still check their phones and their netbooks and things when they should be, I don't know, enjoying the surroundings?
The three that we've had in my area have all been Wi-Fi free events. But yeah, people are checking their phones. I have to admit, I was checking my phone 4 or 5 times a day at least. I was on IRC from my phone while I was out camping. Actually, while I was climbing up the mountain, right. I was still on IRC. But it's still a lot
of fun. That's pretty impressive. So, I mean, that leads to another question. What's the highest Yeah. So what's the highest altitude you've managed to log into Freenode from then, if you do it from mountains and stuff?
Well, these are the Appalachians, which are not the tallest mountains in the world, but I guess I've been up about 1,400 feet and still been on IRC. I'll have to go find some bigger mountains next year.
That's impressive.
I forgot this one, but there's actually another Geeknik in San Francisco in June. I think that's the same day as FOSSCON, if I recall correctly.
Hmm. Cool. So where can people find out more about Geeknicks if they want to meet up and get to meet other geeks and see the sunshine, hopefully, if the weather's good? What's the address for that?
That's geeknik.org. I guess you're a lot more likely to see the sunshine over here in the U.S. than over your way, Dan.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I don't know. It depends what part of the U.S. you're in. If you're in Alaska, then I don't know how the weather is there. So another thing I was going to ask you about very quickly is that you used to have, or you still have technically, a podcast to do with Freenode. I don't know if Randall knows about this, but there was a podcast called Free as in Node, which I was quite a big fan of, and it seems to have gone quiet and there's nothing happening. So can you tell us if that's going to come back? Is there any plans to do more? Because people are asking me, the fans want to hear more from that.
You know, people ask me that regularly. And to be honest, I didn't have anything in particular to do with that project. But I share your pain because I enjoyed it greatly myself, and I would love to see it come. I'd even go so far as to be a part of it. When it comes down to is when you're working with volunteers, sometimes it's hard to keep things like that going. And we lost one of the people that we had working with us who was doing a lot of the pre and post production work, which I think right now we just don't necessarily have someone able to fill that role.
Right.
But I miss it too.
Okay. Well, yeah, it can be. I mean, it's a lot of work. There is a lot of work involved in editing podcasts and stuff. Just getting back to Freenode business very quickly. One of the big things that people like to do with IRC chat rooms, something I've done a little bit of, is embed them into your own website. And I know that caused you some problems on Freenode recently with spamming and JavaScript spammers and things like that. And I think you had to change your approach to how you let people embed stuff on the site. Can you tell us a little bit about that? About what kind of happened there?
What actually happened is there's a way, or there was a way, with our old IRCD, which was rather old. We recently replaced it, which was, I guess, 2 months ago now. And you could there was a way with JavaScript to make other people's browsers connect to IRC and send spam. Over HTTP, which was a problem. It made the real problem here is to put it simply: someone puts a link into IRC, someone clicks on the link, they go to the web page, and that web page makes them spam as well. So as long as people keep clicking the spam, the spam keeps getting sent by someone new. So even traditional methods, you can remove the spammers from the network. Well, if everybody clicks the link, we'd have to remove everybody from the network, which isn't a great solution. The solution was something we were already in the process of doing anyway. We just moved it up the plans a little bit, was to replace our IRCD with one that had a little bit better protection from things such as that. So that particular technical issue at least has been solved.
Yeah. Now you've changed it. You used to be able to use things like Mibit, which is a tool for embedding these scripts and things on your own site to link up to IRC. And I think you've actually blocked Mibit now, and you've moved towards, I think, iframes is the approved way to embed Freenode on your site now, is to use an iframe. So is that the solution now?
Well, yeah. What the Mibit thing was actually a separate issue, but. Yeah, we have a if you go to webchat.freenode.net, there's a web chat there that we borrowed from the good people of QuakeNet that we're actively part of the development of now. And the reason all web chats sort of have the same problem. And that problem basically is somebody's going to your web page and your web page is contacting us on their behalf. And usually what they'll do then is they'll pass the IP address of the end user as some sort of parameter that we can use to then filter if somebody's not supposed to be, you know, if we've had to remove someone from the network and they try to connect, there's ways we can get around that because these web chats send that information. But that depends on your ability to trust that information. And we've had issues with that in the past. So ultimately, the solution was, if a web chat's connecting and it's not causing a problem, we're probably not going to act on it. But if it is causing a problem, we're going to either try to work with them or get people to use ours instead. Because with ours, we know that the IP addresses being reported to us are actually real because we're receiving them in the first place. Because they're connecting to a Freenode basically resource.
Yeah.
So, it does let you embed that iframe into your page, like you said, so you can have an embedded chat on your web page then. There's actually, if you go to webchat.freenode.net, there's a little tool to let you do that. Right up on the top right side.
So a lot of people are still doing that, and it's good to know that there's a solution for that because I know a lot of people like to embed these things in their sites. So just as a kind of a general question then, obviously IRC has been around a long time. We've talked about that, about 20 years or so. But in this kind of changing age with, you know, Google Wave and all these other things coming at us, do you think IRC will still be around in another 20 years' time? Do you think we'll still be using it? Or do you think other things will come along? What's the future for IRC?
Well, I'm hoping it doesn't get replaced with Twitter because 140 characters just isn't enough for me. But I could see it being around for a good long time just because, it works well. And as long as it meets people's needs, people are going to use it. Now, it does have limitations. You know, there's no video, there's no sound, there's none of this, the fancy stuff say that the instant messaging clients can do. But that's kind of its appeal too, because that means it works. You know, like I said before, you can connect a Telnet client to an IRC server and you can use it. It might not be pretty, but you can use it, which means it's approachable and it's very open in its implementation. And I think when the kind of thing we're talking about here is providing free and open source software projects with a framework to communicate, I think the more open it is, the better. And the more approachable it is, the better.
It also has the advantage that it's been around for so long that there's so many clients set up for it, so many different ways of getting into it. I was just going to say, you know, IRC is 20 years newer than SMTP, and we still haven't replaced that. So it's pretty unlikely we're going to replace IRC anytime soon. Yeah. So, Jonathan, I really would like to thank you for coming on today's show and helping explain this additional resource that open source projects can take advantage of. They weren't aware of it already. And fill in a little bit of the details for people that have seen these IRC available. Go to this node on Freenode. Now people will know kind of what that all is that are listening audience. I'm sure there's at least four or five people out there who now go, oh, that's what that is now. So really appreciate you taking your time. Is there any last thing you want to tell us before we let you go?
There is one other... there is one other project I wanted to mention real quick, and that's this is another PDPC effort, and it sort of came out of the GeekNics in a way, but it's something called False Events, and it is a site that we started, I guess, about a year ago, where our objective is to go out, find every single free and open source software event in the world that we can, and list them all in one place. And I'm not going to say we've been 100% successful at finding them all, but that's our goal. And that, you know, that we started out with that mission. And again, same thing, we're trying to get people together in the real world instead of just online. Mm-hmm. And other people are already getting people together in the real world. We might as well leverage that. So that was our intent, and it's since grown to we're kind of exploring ways now. How can we actually help people who want to start an event get it off the ground? What kind of resources do they need? What kind of information do they need? And is there anything we can do to, you know, take a little bit of that away from them so that they can focus on what they're trying to do instead of what they need? So that's
an admirable goal, because it's I know that, for example, the Texas Linux Fest that just happened a few weeks ago was sort of grandfathered by guided by the Scales, Southern California Linux Expo people, just so to make sure to get it off the ground. There's a lot of infrastructure to making an event happen. So I'm glad that you're taking a look at that as well. So I appreciate your efforts on that.
You know, it really is. And, I've been to a few of these events. I've been to Southeast Linux Fest, which is a great one. Mm-hmm. They're in their second year now. And, we went there last year. Actually, a whole carload of people from Pennsylvania, we all drove down there together and had a great time. And I just love to see things like that happen. So if there's anything we can do to make it a little less painful than it is. I mean, those things like, do you start a nonprofit for your event? Things like that are hard. Mm-hmm. And they're harder still if you don't know what steps to take. So that's kind of what we're after. How can we help these people do more with their time and not waste it trying to, well, how do I do this? How do I do that? If someone can tell them and give them that little head start, they can spend more time on making their event awesome.
Mm-hmm. And what's the website for that? Where do people go to find out?
That's fossevents.org.
Okay.
And, right now it's basically, you can explore what events are out there, but like I said, we're making efforts to move that forward. And, I should mention that, we've talked about three things other than Freenode. Mm-hmm. We talked about FossCon, Foss Events, and GeekNIC. Each of these have their own IRC channel on Freenode where you can come to talk about them, their future, where they're going, and find out whatever you want from the people who are actually making it work. So
great.
And those are #FossCon, #FossEvents, and #GeekNIC, respectively.
There's no shortage of channels on Freenode, so obviously have their own channel.
Absolutely.
Well, again, Jonathan, it's been a pleasure having you on today's show. I appreciate you coming on and helping us understand more about what PDPC is all about and what you're all about. Appreciate you coming on. Thanks.
No problem. Thank you very much.
Great. Thanks, Jonathan. Jonathan Simpson with us from the PDPC, representing Freenode and the other projects that he talked about. Interesting, huh, Dan?
Yeah, very interesting, and I think he's very involved in events, which is a really interesting area, as you said, because I think we need to get together physically more and be in the same place, and kind of that's where great new project ideas come out and things like that, I would say.
Yeah, I've been listening to Linux Outlaws, and I hear that you guys just got back from a big event. Was it Barcamp or something?
Yeah, we actually organized an event called Og Camp, which people often think is Odd Camp, but it's not. It's Og Camp with two G's. And that was our own bar camp, open source bar camp event in Liverpool, where I'm based. And we had a good weekend. We had about 200 people came. Simon Phipps came along, who I know is a good friend of the show. He came along and did a great keynote speech for us. And then we had a bar camp around that. It went really well. We got a good attendance, and hopefully we'll make it bigger and better next year.
Very good. Do you want to tell us again where we can find it about your show, the Linux Outlaw show? Where do I get to that?
Yeah, if you go to linuxoutlaws.com, you can find our website there, where all the shows are listed and links to our forums, IRC channel on Freenode, funnily enough, and all the other things that we do, like microblogs and everything else.
Very good, very good. So let's talk a bit about our upcoming guests for Floss Weekly. Next week I have Matt McCall. He's going to talk to us about Mercurial, which is a distributed version control system, kind of like Git and Garrett and a few things we had there. We also have coming up after that, I have just added to the schedule, I believe, Nicole Yankelevich. Inkelevich, one of those, talking about Open Wonderland, which is a 3D immersive environment written in Java. Should be interesting, collaborative working environment. Matt Ray and Mark Hinkle are going to be on the week following, talking about Xenos, which is a monitoring platform to make sure your systems stay up and running and notifying you when they don't. Anthony Bryan just got added with the Metalink project. I believe that's a way to identify where resources are on the net so that you have one universal way of saying this is how to get to it. So no matter whether you're using a browser or a torrent download or whatever, they can get the information there. Michael Aidema is going to talk to us about the Escozia PBX, which is an embeddable small PBX system for SOHO, small office, home office sort of operations. And again, also just added to the schedule, I think since last week, we have Guillermo A. Amaral, who goes by the online handle of Gamerol, which always reminds me of Gamera, the flying turtle from the old series. He's going to talk to us about open source conferences and activities in Mexico across the board there. Sounds like a really good setup. And, of course, you can always go to twit.tv/floss, see our upcoming schedule there, see how to get a hold of me to suggest new people. Again, I guess it's the end of every show. If you want somebody on the show, have the project leader email me. That's the quickest way to go to the top of that list because there's 300 names in the list now, and I won't get to all of them this week. So please make sure the project leader emails me. That's the fastest way to get to the top. Most of the previous shows, that's exactly how it happened. And so I'm going to be at YAPSE, the yet another Perl conference, teaching both the Llama and Alpaca classes as master classes. That's coming up in just a few weeks. I'll have a couple opening slots in that. Somewhere in Columbus, Ohio, I think it is, yeah. And I'm also going to be at OSCON a month later, teaching Smalltalk of all things. So I'm just really keeping busy there. Dan, what keeps you busy these days?
Lots of things. Lots of podcasting, of course. Linux Outlaws every Monday night in Europe. It's kind of Monday afternoon in the US. Another podcast, music stuff. I do a music podcast called Rat Hole Radio, which is at ratholeradio.org. And other than that, I'm doing lots of hacking on Drupal at the moment, PHP hacking, which is new to me because I usually do Python. So it's a bit of a change. Not Perl, I'm afraid, Randall, but I try.
I let everybody do whatever they need to do. It's all fine with me. You can follow me on Twitter at Merlin, M-E-R-L-Y-N. You can follow Dan at Method Dan, I think, M-E-T-H-O-D-A. No, two Ds. No, there's not two Ds. Two Ts, right? Yep. M-E-T-H-O-D-D-A.
No, there is. No.
I'll get it right. It's not Dan Lynch. It's somebody else entirely.
So.
Well, any
that's
last
me
words?
As well. But,
Any last words, Dan?
No, I don't think so. Thanks to everyone for listening, and we'll see you again soon.
All right, and we'll see you all again. Just like Dan said, we'll see you all again next week on Floss Weekly.